A couple of weeks ago, Dave and I went to see Jesus Christ Superstar at the Capitol Theatre here in Sydney. Now, I have loved the music of this rock opera, as it is called, since the 1980s. I know, I don't look that old, but I have. And partly it's because, which is kind of strange now that I think about it, that my school actually did this rock opera as their performance, their school production, when I was a teenager. I did think, when I was thinking about this, I think the next year they did Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel. You probably couldn't get two more contrasting school productions if you tried. But anyway, back to a couple of weeks ago. So off we went to see, and I have to say that I really thoroughly enjoyed this performance. You may have seen some reviews about it. The reviews are a little bit divided, but while it was perhaps a bit more modern and a bit darker, both metaphorically and actually, than I had seen before, the cast and their talents and their voices were, they were honestly just amazing. And the music was unchanged and as good as I remember. I'm not sure Dave appreciated my singing in his ear for the whole of the thing, but anyway. But I've seen this show a few times, and, you know, there's a scene in it where Jesus enters the temple and the people are there. Some of you will know this passage of scripture. The people are there buying and selling goods in the temple, and Jesus kind of clears out the temple and he turns over the tables and reminds them that the temple is to be a house of prayer, not a marketplace. And then as the scene continues in Jesus Christ Superstar and the song goes on, the whole cast start to gather around Jesus and they press into Jesus singing these lyrics. See my eyes, I can hardly see. See me stand, I can hardly walk. I believe you can make me whole. See my tongue, I can hardly talk. See my skin, I'm a mass of blood. See my legs, I can hardly stand. I believe you can make me well. See my purse, I'm a poor, poor man. Will you touch, will you mend me, Christ? Won't you touch, will you heal me, Christ? And as they're singing, they're getting closer and closer to Jesus until he is completely surrounded tightly by a group of people. And, you know, there are many questions around the accuracy, the scriptural accuracy of Jesus Christ Superstar. But I have reflected a lot on this scene and this image of Jesus standing there, so crowded, people touching him, invading his personal space, asking or almost demanding that he help them, that he heal them, that he save them. And then I thought, is it any wonder then, throughout scripture, that we read of times when Jesus needed to get away from the people? Well, we just heard a few moments ago when Pamela read to us from Mark chapter 6, a very well-known miracle of Jesus feeding the 5,000 people with such a small amount of food. But if you were to read the whole of the first six chapters of Mark's gospel, you will discover, or you may be reminded, of what has actually been going on for Jesus and for the disciples. And Pamela alluded to some of this before she read. But let me go back to chapter 1. Jesus was baptized and then he was tempted. He healed lots of people, a man with leprosy, a paralytic, Simon's mother-in-law, a woman who'd been the subject of bleeding for 12 years, a demon-possessed man. Jesus also called the 12 disciples to come and to follow him. He calmed the storm. He'd been questioned by the Pharisees on more than one occasion. He walked on water and he spent considerable time teaching the disciples and the others. And then, of course, we just heard that he fed 5,000 people. So full on and so exhausting, well, in my mind anyway. But also, in these chapters, there are a couple of verses that help to balance out the busyness of what Jesus and the disciples were doing. And they show us how Jesus perhaps balanced his life. In Mark 1:35, we read, "Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed." So much going on for Jesus, and he seemed to have very little alone time. Yet he knew the importance and the necessity of spending time in solitude, in rest with God. And so he practiced it. I love that in the next verses, we read about Simon and his friends, his mates, going out and looking for Jesus. And when they find him, they say, well, this is the Kylie Collinson version in my head, "Ah, there you are. Come on, Jesus, everyone's looking for you. We don't have time for this. We don't have time for you to stop and to spend time praying. There's people who want to hear from you, people who need to be healed." Jesus doesn't say, "Go away," like perhaps I would. He actually responds far more positively. And he says that they should go into the nearby villages so that he can continue preaching, because that's what he's come for. And that's exactly what he goes and does. And then at the beginning of chapter 6, as Pamela said, Jesus sent the 12 disciples out in pairs, giving them authority over the evil spirits. And they went out and they preached and they healed and they drove out the evil spirits as Jesus had instructed them to do. And then we come to this passage that we heard earlier. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they didn't even have a chance to eat, he, that's Jesus, said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. I imagine a scene of excitement from the disciples, perhaps like children who are returning to their parents and reporting to their parents all the things that they've said and seen and done when they've been out with their grandparents for a day, while at the same time being exhausted from all the excitement. And I think in these couple of verses that Jesus actually reminds the disciples of their humanity and perhaps their frailty. Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Well, as we know, there are many fine lines in life, and we hear people say that quite frequently. And I think the balance between doing and being, or doing and resting, is one of these fine lines that is a challenge. If you've been here over the last few weeks, you will know that we have been talking about rest. And here are the disciples who haven't been really resting. They're reporting all of the things back to Jesus that they had done, the lives they had helped transform, the people they had interacted with, all of which were good. In fact, they were probably all great, the things that they had done. But people, as we can all testify, can be a bit demanding and a bit of hard work. So much so that even the most basic things like eating can sometimes go by the wayside. I think perhaps I could ask for a show of hands, but I won't. But ask a teacher or a doctor or a nurse or some other essential worker, or even a young mum with a baby, if they've ever missed a meal because of the demands of people, and I'm sure they would say yes. So I just want to consider this morning, just for a few moments, this balance between being and doing. Perhaps even too much constant activity, or then too much withdrawal. This is a tension that I suspect most of us live with. This is a tension that I live with. I know I've told you many times that I find the writings of William Barclay very helpful. And in his Bible study notes on these particular verses, he says this. He refers to this whole thing of balance as the rhythm of the Christian life. And the Christian life is a continuous going into the presence of God, he says, from the presence of people, and coming out into the presence of people from the presence of God. People and God, backwards and forwards. And then he says, no one can work continually without rest, and no one can live a Christian life unless they are continually giving themselves to God. When considering this, I immediately thought of Mary and Martha, the two sisters who you may be aware of as recorded in Luke's Gospel chapter 10. And Martha was busy doing all the things that have to be done when you have someone in your home, while Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus. And Martha was a little bit agitated, perhaps a bit ticked off, though it doesn't quite put it that bluntly in the Bible, that her sister wasn't helping. In fact, Martha questions Jesus about this because she was distracted, it says, by all the preparations that had to be made. And she came to him, that's Jesus, and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? And Jesus replied to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. There is only one thing worth being concerned about, and Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken from her. So where do you sit? Perhaps on this continuum of activity and rest, of being and doing, of serving, or of sitting at the feet of Jesus? Or have you given up altogether, attempting to balance between being and doing? When I was a new Salvation Army officer, a minister, I was surprised that I was required to write goals. This is going back some 22 years. And my goals that I still write these days are nothing like Dave's 8 categories that he's talked about. But back then even, we were required to write some ministry and some personal goals that would help develop us as people and as leaders. And we're still required to do this. But when I first became an officer, I was a young, well, a mum. I'm not sure I was young. I was youngish. To a 1-year-old child. And I think every year for the first 10 or 12 years, I wrote the same goal. And funnily enough, no one ever questioned and said, why are you not achieving this? I don't know if they read the year befores or however it worked. But the goal was around finding balance. Balance in my home life, balance in my ministry, or basically just trying to keep all the balls in the air without them all falling on the ground and me crashing in a heap on the floor. I'm sure there are lots of other people who can relate to that. And then, well, then I heard a former lawyer, now minister, Canadian man called Kerry Newhoff speak about balance and his thoughts on this. Newhoff speaks very openly and honestly about experiencing burnout quite a number of years ago now. And so he's a great person to listen to on this subject. So it made me feel a whole lot better when a super intelligent, high achieving man actually said, well, it's really hard to achieve balance. I was like, thank goodness, because I've been failing at this goal for the last 12 years. I don't know why I kept writing it, because it just kept making me feel terrible about myself. But then he said, but do we want to achieve balance anyway? Is that what we're aiming for? Is that realistic? Wouldn't it be better if rather than being balanced, that we were being intentional? Intentional with our time, with our work, with our ministry, with our families, with our partner or spouse, with our rest, with our time with God. Plan these things. Plan your family time. Put time in your diary to do even the most mundane activities. Plan when you're going to serve. Plan your rest. Block out time in your calendar to spend with God. Great advice from someone who had experienced some really significant challenges in his life and has come out the other side, being intentional. You know, though he was constantly pulled in so many directions, Jesus still found time to rest and to meet with his Father. Retreating into the stillness, into the quiet, into a place of rest, to commune with the one who sent him to earth as a man to complete his mission in the first place. Though Jesus was fully God, he still had the needs of a human to find rest and reprieve and to foster his relationship with God. And he modelled this, didn't he, to the disciples? And because of the scriptures, he's also modelled it to us. He modelled being intentional. I want to return again for the fourth week in a row to Matthew 11 and the words from the Message paraphrase that say, "Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it." This is Jesus speaking. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Walk with me and work with me and learn and watch how I do it. Or back to William Barclay. The rhythm of the Christian life is the alternate meeting with God in the secret place and serving people in the marketplace. Watch how Jesus does it and learn from him. Be like Jesus. Be intentional about doing and resting. Sometimes it's about being intentional in the small things, not always committing ourselves to 2 hours of prayer. You know, one of the things I introduced into my life about, 6 or 7 years ago now is occasionally driving in silence. And I did this on Friday. I had to go out to the airport and I drove back to the office in silence. May not be everybody's way of resting, but for me, it gave me the headspace that I needed to focus on what I needed to focus on. What about yesterday? I hung a load of washing out in the backyard. Nothing exciting about that. But we've got seats out there, and I had some time. And so I just took 10 minutes to sit on a chair, and I appreciate not everybody would want to do this, but could watch the birds and the trees in our backyard. Just being intentional for a short amount of time. So my challenge to us as we wrap up this series today is, how is the rest of your year looking and how are you going to implement rest? How and when Are you going to go with Jesus? Just like the disciples did, and we know that it didn't all work out as Jesus and the disciples had hoped. But where is the quiet place where you can go with him to find some rest?